District 9 nominated for Best Picture? Seriously. District 9. It wasn't
that's a good
that
question.
Good.
It has no ending for one
because they needed a 10th movie.
Yeah.
Because Peter Jackson produced it and they feel bad for not giving it to him for Fellowship.
I mean, you know, my problem with District 9 is that it's a gorgeous movie. Special effects are great. The acting is good. The script is good, but they just don't work together. It's not a very good movie.
I wouldn't say it's not a very good movie. It was better than I thought it would be. I thought it'd be crap.
I went in with low expectations, and they were satisfied.
Was the exceeding of expectations a good quantifiable quality element for a movie? I mean,
I wanted to watch it, and I rented it. I just never watched it. I watched Julia and Julia, but I didn't watch District 9.
Oh, my God.
Wow. That's unexpected. Didn't expect that.
Hey, Redbox is great. You know what? That was a good movie for a dollar.
You know, I have to admit, Julia and Julia did look more interesting in the commercials than District 9.
Well, as far as...
Because, I had already seen District 9 when it was Alien Nation.
Alien Nation is so great.
I have seen neither of these two movies, and I want to see both. But I have to admit, I want to see Julie and Julia more.
It's actually, as far as a drama goes, with like a... Remember Sliding Doors came out in the 90s with the whole two stories going on at one time?
Was that a porno?
No, it was another drama.
No, something else.
That was Gwyneth Paltrow, wasn't it?
Yeah, but basically, yeah.
I'm sad that you know that.
Sliding what? Something horrors? I'm
sorry. I know movies. I'm a geek. I'm sorry.
Basically, Sliding Doors was a movie where Gwyneth Paltrow played a sheepish woman and something could have happened. A sheepish woman, yes, and not in that sense, please.
No, I know what you mean.
That was the porno. And then the average listener of our podcast, sheepish.
In the porno version, they actually bring in a sheep.
Yeah. Wow.
But, like, it goes with the alternate what could have happened, how her life would have lived, and then the other way, how it lived if she didn't do it.
So it's the Star Trek Next Generation episode Tapestry.
Basically, and that's what Julie and Julia is.
Me too.
You got this woman.
Tapestry's good. I don't know why you're comparing it to that.
You got this half the movies.
I'm sorry.
Half of this movie is a woman trying to cook every single one of Julia Child's recipes and blogging about, and the other half is a biopic about Julia Child, and that is why I watched it instead of District 9, because I just forgot I had it and turned it in.
So it's kind of like adaptation. Like, how do you make a movie about a blog of Julia Child's recipes? So, well, you just intertwine.
As far as a good dramatic comedy without lasers, it was actually pretty good one.
Anyone who doesn't think a thing about Julia Child's life wouldn't be interesting has never watched any of it. I had a grandmother who watched a whole bunch of Julia Child things, and she was nuts. I mean, there's a reason this woman was on television. It wasn't because she was boring.
She was really entertaining. I watched her show before she died.
Yeah, I don't know what – I never knew what the hell she was making, but I was riveted.
Okay, but back on this – Best Picture thing and talking about District 9, I think the problem I have is that the whole reason they opened up the category, they added films that were available.
There's so many good movies. They all need to be nominated.
But the movies that they put into this are not the movies that were intended to be put in it. These are crap films.
Michael Bay's going to make Bad Boys 3, isn't he? I mean, that's perfect.
It's going to be a masterpiece.
The thing is,
Michael Bay should break down and make like Bad Movie 6.
Yes,
just called Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen. But
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Hey! This is New Soundwave episode 16.
thing is, with this expanding it, what they actually get to do is what people griped about the whole time. They'd be like, I've never seen any of these art films, these foreign films, and they're putting in these people have actually seen. Because what one? The Piano. What did you see? Stella Got Her Groove Back. And that's what they're doing. And now we're like, oh, that's what we get. Avatar, seriously? Oh, it made a lot of money. That means it's good.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
See,
Cameron has, I mean, he's made epic industry-changing things in the past.
Yeah, and then he made Titanic and this.
Yep, exactly. No,
and Titanic, while it was not terribly fun, did resonate with a lot of people. And I think, it resonated with indie industry.
14-year-old girls.
Yeah.
Well,
but
well,
not
I mean,
groundbreaking.
Groundbreaking film.
Well, and I would no, it's not. And it's funny to find myself arguing on its side at some points because at the time I was just like, yeah, let's you know, because people kept stacking it up against Star Wars. I'm like, yeah, let's see who's buying Titanic toys in 15 years.
There were Titanic toys?
No, there weren't. And
that's, well, there's Titanic.
And that's a crime.
If there had been, man, we'd be up to our asses in them.
I want the iceberg to
miss out on something.
Freezing Jack with door, but
I've still yet to see Titanic.
I will never see Titanic.
I saw it once in the theater. I was glad I saw it. It's not a bad movie. I felt no need to buy it. I felt no need to see it ever again. It was a decent movie. You know, it was not worth what was paid for it, if you ask me, though they made that money back.
You know, we're
stole, and I use this word not lightly, stole the Best Picture Oscar from LA Confidential, but it was what it was. It made a big impact, and it's hard to deny James Cameron's influence on the industry. And when he makes a big $300 million movie that makes $1 billion, you can't entirely blame the Academy for taking notice.
You know, the Academy, there is absolutely value to the Academy Award for Best Picture. I mean, everybody who makes a movie wants to get the Academy Award. But for God's sakes, Gladiator won Best Picture. Really, how valuable is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gladiator. Gladiator is a pretty great movie.
Gladiator is a pretty above average movie with a really bad ending.
You know what's a better thing than Gladiator? Planet Hulk.
Yes. Thank you, Chris.
No. Nice. Nicely done.
Well, and a great segue there isn't
what it is Gladiator.
Hulk. It's Gladiator with the Hulk.
Yes, it made it better.
With the ending we kind of hoped Gladiator would have had.
Yes. The comic, maybe the movie.
The comic.
The movie, the DVD has a different ending than sort of a different ending than
it just ends.
We're talking about the planet. Everyone, if you're trying to figure out what the hell we're talking about, Planet Hulk came out on DVD yesterday as we're recording this.
Buy it.
It is good. But I'm gonna qualify it and say this: buy it if you have not and do not plan on reading the comic.
I like the idea of the comic. I've never read it.
Well, this movie has the idea of the comic, and it has that intent. But I think what I'm gonna spend most of this discussion of the DVD talking about is how it isn't quite the comic.
It doesn't
quite live up to the promise of the comic.
I like it better than the comic. I love the Hulk's characterization in the comic. I think it's far and away better. But the comic itself is 400 pages, and about 200 of those I don't care about. The DVD condenses it down to something that I really enjoyed watching. And, I mean, it's not quite as deep, quote-unquote, as the comic is. But it's way more fun.
Well, I'm going to differentiate a little with you here on that very specific point. I think, if you've read Planet Hulk, there's not a whole lot for you in the animated version. Everything
Beta Ray Bill.
Beta Ray Bill. Beta Ray Bill is the exemplification of something that's different in the DVD, but has no extra meaning. Beta Ray Bill does nothing different from the Silver Surfer. They could have put the Silver Surfer in there and there'd be no reason to notice the difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's Beta Ray Bill.
Beta Ray Bill's awesome.
He does one thing different from Silver Surfer,
Or Beta Ray Bill is obscure and removes some of the believability from it, which is sort of what I felt like Silver Surfer did in the comic.
Yes, Silver Surfer is way more intimidating than Beta Ray Bill.
But that's just
Silver Surfer makes more sense in the comic, too.
Yes, he's cosmic.
In the comic, they bring up the Silver Surfer, and at the time in the comic, I'm reading it going like, man, that's a little out there. But in the DVD, it's Beta Ray Bill, and he brings that like, boy, that's a little out there aspect like – up like four notches. You're just like Beta Ray Bill.
No, you're wrong there, Ender.
Beta
when
Ray
I saw
Bill?
That, I was thinking Beta Ray Bill. You know,
Yeah, well, that's just, I mean, Beta Ray Bill is debatable for consistent existence. Like, why is this character even still on the canon? It's a very strange character.
That's Beta Ray Bill.
He has the power of Thor. He's awesome.
He is awesome.
But well, that's just, I'm not even sure Thor should still be around. He makes so little sense.
Well, that's how you make a comic interesting these days. You throw out some weird, obscure guy that no one cares about anymore, and all of a sudden it's the best comic ever. It happens every time.
It's Beta Ray Bill. Come on.
Exactly.
I think I'm taking that Beta Ray Bill in the exact opposite tone. But I think, I mean, the original comic has a lot of tragedy and a lot of character that this version just doesn't have. And this is like, if you're interested in what the Planet Hulk storyline is, and you don't feel like sitting down and reading this giant comic,
watch Gladiator.
Watch Gladiator.
500 words
if you really want some Hulk in it, buy this DVD. It is a good cartoon. It is good animated.
It's Marvel's best effort so far.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's Marvel's best effort
in animated movies, not best effort in animation.
Right. I don't want to downplay how good the thing itself is. I'm just saying that it, much like so many things, what its biggest detractor is what came before. And there's not much you can get out of watching this movie that wouldn't be better served if you're willing to put the time in by reading Planet Hulk. Now, on the same front, I will say the one thing that is really different that I really fantastically enjoyed above and beyond the comic is the fate of the Red Emperor.
Yes.
Is much better and much more,
it's more fulfilling.
Ironically apropos.
Yeah.
And fulfilling. That's exactly right. Than what you're going to get in the comic.
One thing was much
better done in the show. I don't know why they didn't even think of it in the comic. It was much better done here. I felt like the Red Emperor kind of like just like disappeared out to nowhere in the comic. Whereas here, his demise is a real climax.
Now,
it's better. But not only is there like not as much tragedy and hence meaning in this version of Planet Hulk, there is none of it, not a speck. And I'd like to get back to this later. I'll let you guys go, but there's one specific scene I feel like is really missing.
The part where it's a sled the whole time. Jeez.
No. there's one thing that I think that
Planet Hulk, the DVD
is really missing.
I'm really glad that the strange alien Hulk suckling is gone. Where the spikes are like feeding on the Hulk toward the end of the book. I am so glad
that. But they never even get near that.
No, they don't. No, they don't. The spikes.
That whole period of time doesn't even exist in the show.
Yeah, yeah. The best part of the whole book. is after Hulk defeats the Red Emperor, and
yeah, and none of that is present.
None at all.
None. Absolutely not.
Is this on trade paperback now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's how I read all my comic stories outside of certain things. It's just like, oh, I'll pick that.
Me too. I read this, and that may be part of my jadedness with this. I literally finished reading Planet Hulk, the trade paperback, like 12 hours before I watched Planet Hulk.
I finished the book. I watched the movie first. I finished the book yesterday. And I really liked it. I really did. I thought it was awesome. There are parts of it I was like cheering. Yes, that's awesome. Yeah. But I think what I think would be the ideal version of Planet Hulk is if you take the trade paperback and you edit out about 100 pages of it. I think if you do that would be the perfect version of the book.
And that could be, but wouldn't you say that this animated version edits about 250 pages out of it? Yeah,
absolutely. It absolutely does. You know,
I mean,
well, that's how a movie
rude character isn't even there.
Yeah.
That's how a movie based on anything written, how it draws in more people because they're like, great, I don't have to read 5 chapters about how someone feels about something in their childhood. I can just see the action.
Yeah, but this is a comic book. It's not that far off in some ways of a movie.
You know, there's one thing about the movie that ended up disappointing me a little bit. And that Hulk wasn't voiced by Lou Ferrigno.
Well, you know, he might as well have been as few lines as he had in the actual movie.
Actually, my second favorite part of the whole book was not included either. It's when Banner, it's when the Hulk was talking about all the people that were his enemies, and he was talking about how Banner was his greatest enemy of all, and how Banner tried to create a bomb that could destroy everything. He wanted to destroy the Hulk. I mean, that is just such a great, that's such a great page.
And that's, well, I'm going to take that as a segue into what I felt the one scene of anything. There's a lot of scenes I felt like were really missing from this, that were really quintessential scenes from the comic. But the one I felt was really missing, even from this version, is that as he is becoming romantically entwined with his future queen, there was one scene in which, you know, before they were married, she insisted that she really knew who he was.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for a moment, he turns back into Bruce Banner.
She accepts him.
And she accepts him. And, you know, it's just this little, you know, he's like sitting there in his armor dangling off of him in his shorts. He goes, I'm Bruce. And he said I could come out for a minute. And Bruce accepts her, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you can't have the Hulk without Bruce Banner.
Then the Hulk gets busy.
Yeah, I'm going to say that again. You cannot have the Hulk without Bruce Banner. And even though in the entirety of Planet Hulk, Bruce Banner appears twice and very briefly, it is an important part of the definition of the duality of the character, and that this whole movie went by and they never – you literally, even the credits, there is, you know, someone plays the Hulk and no one plays Bruce Banner. There's something deficient in any Hulk media with no Bruce Banner.
You know, I didn't consider that. That is a true deficiency in the DVD. I still really enjoyed it, and I think it's probably overall more enjoyable, but that is absolutely
true. There were lots of shortcomings in terms of the story, but I think I would have forgiven everything if she had sat down and had that scene where she said, I need to know who you are.
Then he jumps her bones. Yeah,
I'm absolutely. Bruce Banner.
Just like 15 more minutes might have been good, yeah. I think.
You know what, my favorite, you know,
those 30 seconds of I'm Bruce Banner and her being okay with it would have made the story for
so
me.
Is Marvel making this for teens, or are they making this for comic fans? Are they making this for kids? Who are they making this for?
My question is, are they making a World War Hulk afterward?
You know, if I would, it would make perfect sense, but they didn't hint at it. They should have.
Yeah, there's no hint of it. There is no hint of the tragedy that is coming.
It's like, well, Hulk lived happily ever after on this planet.
I know.
If it sells well, that can be the beginning of it.
Yes, that's
the ending can be the beginning of Hulk War Hulk.
Isn't right. I think I like it better that they made the ending an ending where they can pick up later from that, but it doesn't have to look like it's trying to lead into something that never materializes.
But nothing Hulk ever ends closed ended. It's very un-Hulk.
Well, what about those TV movies?
Yes.
That last one.
Dan's the Incredible Hulk is the only one that ends.
Yeah, there's one, and that's when they meant to stop doing it. You know what I mean? I'm just like, are you done with the Hulk here? Because that was the problem.
I really want to watch the Return of the Incredible Hulk now.
I like the one where he and Thor team up, and all Thor does is
the Return of the Incredible Hulk. Yes.
The Daredevil one where Daredevil just sucks for 2 hours.
The Trial of the Incredible Hulk, yeah.
It's some guy, it's like a ski mask. I'm Daredevil. Oh, are you?
Seriously? Like
Richard Mall is Kingpin or something? What the
no, Kingpin is played by John Rhys Davies.
John Davies. I was going to say, you can't blame the Kingpin for that.
Yeah.
He wears his sunglasses at night.
Yes, he does.
I wear my sunglasses at night. Hi.
Takes off for flight statue.
Okay, anything else for Planet Hulk?
Buy it.
Buy it. It is good, but if you've read the comic, there's not a lot here for you.
Well, speaking of buy it, Zombieland.
Buy the trade if you really want to.
I got the trade at Heroes Con this past year for like $5. That's like the best deal ever. So seriously, hit up your local comic convention.
I paid the full 20 for it and didn't feel bad about it.
Yeah, it's totally worth it. Hit up your local comic convention. They half price trade paperback boxes. Best deal ever.
Made me a Hulk fan. I wasn't a Hulk fan before.
Really? No. Yeah, I don't think I've
been a Hulk fan beyond like 15 days hence.
I wouldn't say
I am now a Hulk fan.
That's not my idealized version of the Hulk.
No. No, it's
not. It was fun. It was good writing. It said to me that there are good stories to be had here, where I wasn't so sure of that before.
Oh, gosh, Chris. The Hulk is one of those characters.
Bruce Bixby. Shows I enjoyed as a child.
The Hulk, you're going to have to – it's got to be Peter David. But which version of the Hulk is the best?
See, I would really like to see something with the Gray Hulk. That would be awesome.
But yeah, it's not my idealized version of the Hulk. For me, yeah. My idealized version is the Stan Lee version from, you know, the 60s.
I was about to say, isn't it just the fact that anything Stan Lee touches is just gold?
Yeah, anything he touched back then.
Except for Ravage 2099.
Yeah, Ravage
2099. Yeah, touched, I should say. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. Zombieland is on DVD. I don't know that everyone's watched it, but everyone should. It's excellent. Buy it.
I went to look for it. It's sold out. Can't find it. That's good.
I could have found a copy of it today. I noticed it was sold out at Best Buy, and I saw it at Target. Here's my thing. I'm not a big fan of zombies.
Me neither.
And Zombieland is still good, is it?
Yes.
Okay. I was about to, after we get off this podcast, I'm going to dig into Siege number 2. For having a moment of what I call gornography.
Huh. And I want to check it out. I haven't got to check it out yet, but I want to check it out because it's the writers for this or the guy that wrote this that's going to be writing Deadpool. So
the movie
apparently
is so...
everything else too, JD. Oh.
All right, well, I'll have to watch it then because I'm such a fan of Deadpool, I can't even say.
Chris, anyone who's watched this movie, do not spoil anything because the best scene in the movie – it's a huge spoiler, but
the intro is one of my favorite things ever too.
Yeah, they edit For Whom the Bell Tolls, but you know, I'll forget that, but
remember the opening of the first Deadpool comic?
The ongoing
Fan versus Fan Boy.
They have
I'll
back off.
But Zombieland is excellent. Watch it. It's hilarious. You know, they could have replaced it with something else, werewolves. They could have replaced it with wild dogs. I don't care. It's hilarious.
I was just arguing this week that a Deadpool comic with giant biker raccoons armed to the teeth doesn't need an explanation.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm disappointed I haven't seen it yet. Usually I'm the first to see these movies. It's just been a bad year for movies for me. How's it par up with, say, Dead Alive?
With Dead Alive, seriously? I think the most appropriate I think probably what most people compare it to is Shaun of the Dead.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. That's fair, I guess.
Shaun of the Dead's
It's like
good.
Our Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, it's like the American version of Shaun of the Dead, but I would say that it's superior in most ways.
I think I like it better.
I liked Shaun of the Dead, but Shaun of the Dead was about all the Shaun of the Dead I could take.
Exactly. Exactly.
Shaun of the Dead was brilliant, but the problem is in this country is whenever something's foreign, it's automatically superior. And Shaun of the Dead was a good movie, but it wasn't all that in a bag of chips.
What a surprise. It's these people who speak our language better than we do.
You see, I like them.
It's not exactly our language,
which is...
We borrowed their language.
No, see, I'm not saying
they
more.
Noah Webster fixed it.
I mean, actually, better. They use the words we have better than we tend to.
Their enunciation is in pronunciation.
No. Superior. I'm not talking about enunciation. That's just what I'm saying.
They leverage the vocabulary better.
Yes, that's precisely it. And that was a very astute way to say that.
Thank you very much. Okay. I love them zombie movies, so let's okay. What else? Wii outsells the NES and the DS outsells the Game Boy, all versions.
It's a new day.
Yeah. I mean, that
is... I love Nintendo. I love these systems. I hope Nintendo continues to kick ass. Nintendo is the name and innovation in all of gaming so far for all time.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
Everybody liked their 3D. Everybody liked their analog and their platforming.
Analog. Analog existed in.
Yeah, it was on the 2600.
Analog is old.
Analog is the child in the modern age of the N64, and everybody can get over that.
That much is true. Well,
You like analog, it comes from the N64. You like 3D, it comes from the N64.
Or Star Fox or Virtual Racing.
Well, yeah, that's where 3D
or the arcade,
but it's proper control. All can't, I mean, like, you know, proper
or the creature from the Black Lagoon.
No, this is you can go back and say like, oh well, Alone in the Dark had polygons before the N64. It's like, yeah, except they didn't catch on and they sucked and they were on PC. All of a sudden, there's like Mario 64 and we're up to our ass in 3D and nothing else is ever going to matter ever again.
Man, I love Mario 64 so much.
I like the
and
fact
it's
that
Nintendo. Good.
I like the fact that Mario 64 was originally planned as a Super Nintendo game, and that should tell you what power is going to do versus a solid idea.
Yeah. No. Nintendo invented almost every meaningful upgrade in gaming. Nintendo did, and even the PS1 was a Nintendo design.
I love that Virtual Boy.
Yeah, Virtual Boy is fantastic.
yeah, Virtual Boy. I mean, that was
everybody shoots one off when they don't mean to.
You know, really though, if Nintendo had developed the idea of a cell phone and a video game system all in one, it probably would have worked.
They did.
That's probably why they didn't do it.
Well, they did a deal with Nokia back toward the beginning of last decade at aughts. Or it's going to be a Game Boy Advance partnered up with a cell phone. And Nokia, for some reason, came out with an N-Gage that didn't work out. So I don't know what exactly happened behind the scenes, but they were working on it, and they were like, they pulled out for some reason. Every time they pull out, it either goes wonderful or bad.
You know, I'll even say this. Nintendo had the right idea when it came to solid-state media. It's just that they didn't have the right idea at the right time.
Exactly. Right. That's exactly right.
They should have you could have a solid-state media system now, and it would work because solid-state media is so cheap, but it wasn't
They pulled out Mario 64 and put it in the DS, and it was all of a sudden it was like, oh, so this is genius now, huh? Yeah. You know,
well, the difference is it's like developers, and every time you want to get behind what actually drives a system, it's games, you know, not the quality of the game, it's how many of them are on it. I mean, the PlayStation 1 outsold 64 because it just had 1,000 games, while the 64 didn't. And quality doesn't even come in, it just depends on what developers can make a buck off of without putting a buck in.
Right. No, N64 totally died in the marketing front. And that was just it. Like, all of Sony's marketing prowess is what held it together through the PS2. They had the licensing agreements.
Everyone was on board.
That's what made that system fly for the PS2.
Well, and now Nintendo had the one licensing agreement for 64. They had, you know, Superman 64.
But they also – they had GoldenEye.
And they had Star Wars.
I love the hell out of their Star Wars game, so I'm not sure where you're going.
Everyone was all on board for the Ultra 64 until they decided to make it cartridge-based. I think that really,
if it wasn't for the cartridge, they lost a bunch of momentum then. It was a very fine and strange point of technology, but they still had the 3D market. I mean, the 3D technology down in a way the PS1 never managed. And to this day, we have crappy controllers out of Sony who have never managed to catch up to the N64 controller.
Didn't we talk about that
last
week?
Yeah, we did. The N64 controller kind of sucks. I'm sorry.
No, yeah. What?
I like the Nintendo 64 controller a lot.
The N64 controller sucks. I'm sorry. You need two analog sticks to be worth anything.
But those ones aren't in the right place, and they never use them right. They never use.
I'm not saying that the PlayStation controller is all that in a bag of chips.
I'm just saying that the N64 controller is the predecessor of the modern controller that we're used to with two analog sticks.
The Xbox 360, awesome.
It's the predecessor to that, and it is not the PlayStation controller with a couple of analog sticks slapped down in the wrong places. That is not what we're used to using. And the PS1, and to some degree the PS2, never used those properly.
So the PS3...
it's getting motion
control. Yeah.
Way to catch up.
I would love to kvetch about the PS3, but I don't own one, so I have no basis.
Didn't they have a motion control to begin
with? The six axis.
Yeah.
Did it still work?
Yeah.
Did it do anything though in any actual game?
Yeah.
The thing is,
I'm asking this as a legitimate question. I don't mean to. I'm asking.
The thing is, they supported it, and they still do. It's just that they got to the point where developers wanted to scale back support with it, where you
Well, the PS3 is suffering what some old, very old systems like back in the early 80s did, which is their processor's better, and to some degree, maybe even their control scheme is better, but no developer is willing to keep up with it when what they really want to do is make a game that will play on the 360 and the Wii, and maybe if the PS3, if they get around to it. And so the PS3 is suffering from what once was its great strength, marketing, in the PS2. Now they're suffering from that because all that marketing money has flocked to the Wii.
Well, the Wii is easy to program for. Plus, you can port your PS2 games over to it.
Plus, the marketing
PSP games
footprint.
I mean, obviously, I mean, at this point.
Well, let's really look at the brass facts of what every. If you look at each generation, what pilots the most successful system? How much does it cost me? How many games are available? And how much is it going to cost somebody to make a game for it? I mean, the Wii is the weakest game system out there. Well, you know what? PlayStation 2 was the weakest of the last generation, but you know what? It was cheaper. Yep. It was cheaper to put games out for.
It was hard to program for, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Nintendo isn't. Right?
I mean, the Xbox was a PC. I mean, it was x86 architecture. I mean, I could program for it.
Yeah, that was the beauty of the Xbox is just, at least it came in second last generation. I mean, it was, do I want to buy this from my computer and upgrade to crap out or just buy this Xbox?
The big difference this generation, though, is that they're not making anything original for the Wii if it's not a Nintendo video game. They're making a PS2 game they're putting it on the Wii, or they're making a Wii game that they're putting on the PS2 or the PSP.
And it's mostly crappy software.
It doesn't sell. Nobody buys it. I mean, it just fills up.
This is the thing that we probably won't touch upon in the dork nomenclature, but my daughter of the tender age of 3 has been very happily playing and beating Dora the Explorer and, you know, her brother Diego games, 4 of them, for the past, 6 weeks. She's playing her Wii and playing it well, and things are being made that she can play and understand.
I think it's a federal offense to talk about your daughter playing with her Wii.
I don't know if you've checked lately.
The thing is the Wii has succeeded for the first time in becoming a family gaming system. And so I mean, that's the core of its success, that it's cheap, but it's also the family system. So Chris's point, the only games that sell are the first party games from Nintendo, and gamers play those. And then the crappy party games or the educational games for kids or parties. But they sell tons of those games like no other system has ever.
Well, it's absurd how much those games sell.
Isn't that the same market that has made our maybe or maybe not so beloved Revenge of the Fallen something worth talking about? That same general market of people who aren't as, you know, concerned or perhaps condescending as we may like.
You know, when you really want to drop it down to a base level and stop looking at nerd reality is a minority of the actual business market. And, you know, if you want to watch how the game trends have been going, it's been going in this direction already. What was one of the biggest games last generation? Katamari Damacy, where you had all these wonderful games like Halo and Ninja Gaiden and Zelda and stuff. But what'd you do? You roll the ball around.
I'm a big nerd, and I went to a convention with a bunch of game nerds. And we are cheered for Katamari Damacy.
Yeah, but the game, anybody can play Katamari. It's the thing. It's like Guitar Hero. It's a
great game. I'm just saying that doesn't fall outside of the box.
Yeah, it's all inclusive. Anybody, even nerds love Katamari.
Katamari Damacy was very nerdy in its origins.
But anybody can play it. And anybody
wasn't alienating.
I was a video game store manager at the time, and we got taken to a convention where the developers literally were standing there shocked when the game store managers stood up and cheered for Katamari before it came out, because we knew it was going to be big. And we were all big gaming dorks. So that's not outside the realm.
No, that's pretty much outside the realm, because despite how nerdy or backstory it's got to be, the simplicity of the game sold it for the rest of the world. That made up for the sales numbers outside of the dorks. And then you get your Guitar Heroes, your Band Heroes, DDR. Hey, Madden, guess what? It's you know, it's reaching out to a farther audience.
No, I totally agree with you on all those music games, but not about Katamari. I don't think it was quite the same deal. I can be wrong.
You know, I don't play Madden. I'm a nerd.
Just burn you, buddy. Yeah, I'm just burning you, buddy. But no, look at the car racing.
I wouldn't touch Madden with yours.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, look at the car racing games. They sell multiple millions. Just driving around in a circle.
Yeah, if you go back and look at the NES, like as kids, I played all the great games. But I also played a bunch of really crappy games, and I loved it. Like Tiger Heli. I remember playing through that game and playing through it and playing through it and playing through it. It was like, when does this game end? I actually called the Nintendo game counselors up and like, how do I beat this game? You can't. It just goes on forever. That sucks.
I mean, you know, I remember playing
that's value, Brian.
Dude, you didn't get that. Yeah, try owning a Master System for 10 minutes.
I've got two.
So do I. Anyway.
Kindred spirits.
Yes, that's sad.
How many, including old games of that variety, how many games would you say we all had?
I don't think I have more than
God.
I'm not counting.
Video games are in your possession. I can answer that.
I'm in the 500 number. You know, that's not that many.
I think I'm up to about 50.
I'm
kidding too.
This is a guess to some degree, because I know I've bought a ton more since the last time I actually counted. I would say roughly 1,500.
I'm looking at 150 NES games, about 100 Genesis, probably about 30 or 40 Master System, about 50 DS games and Game Boy Advance games. But, you know, if you get into the 16-bit generation, I just quit buying games. I just quit caring.
See, I'm kind of close to that, but I didn't.
I have to track it back to the Atari days, and it gets to a point where it's hard to keep up.
Right. Similarity. Yeah. Yeah, no, there is that. There's a certain degree of like, okay, where am I counting doubles?
Yeah, or like, say, handheld games for a while there where they were the same game with a different backlay.
Yeah. I mean, I have a Vectrex. Anybody else got a Vectrex? No.
I almost owned a Studio 2, though. I almost bought a – I came so close. My friend Jason had a RCA Studio 2, and he's selling it, and he's like, he wanted $50 for it. And I'm like, wow, nobody has those, but wow, I don't really want it.
I remember this kid in my neighborhood had an Odyssey when everyone had an Atari.
Oh, I have an Odyssey.
Yeah, that poor kid. Because he was like – at the time, Atari was, you know – this was before the crash when it got even awesomer. Everyone wants to talk about the crash and it died. No, the crash was the best thing for kids and video games, because we were going to the drugstore getting a billion. Yeah. I mean, that was awesome.
I got my Odyssey and all the games I have for it for free. Somebody had them in their closet.
Sweet.
Yeah, I was pretty lucky on that front.
I remember one kid had an Apple IIe. He was the only one in the neighborhood who had it, and he had like a ton of games because, you know, computers back then, you could just – well, I guess you still could – just copied it on the floppy.
Don't and copy that floppy.
Oh, you beat me.
Karateka is hard gaming, buddy. F your same first-person shooter you played 20 times already. Karateka, buddy. Figure out how to make a stupid guy bow.
Okay.
Which button do I push? God damn it, why is the princess
going yet? Man, I'm a hardcore gamer, and I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Karateka was older. It's on Nintendo, too, I believe. And Atari is an older game made by the same guy who made Prince of Persia. It was one of the first games featuring rotoscoped animation, and it's a fighting game of essence. You basically take karate guy. He lands on an island to rescue princess. You fight each guy, and then when you get to the final princess, you have to bow or she'll kill you, and you lose the game.
Wow!
And it's a complete secret and different every time. So, like on the computer game, everyone would be like slamming the keyboard trying to get this idiot to bow after fighting everybody in the world, and. Like, one uncle could do it. And it was like, dude, he beat Karateka. Time to play it again.
Wow, what a crock.
Yeah, it was. And there's
so that's when game developers hated people that bought games.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There was that period. There's like, God, those bitter people sitting behind keyboards, like, how can I make the buyers of this game suffer?
Play Raiders of the Ark on the Atari, and you can see that beginning. What? Do I got a what?
Not until the golden age of LucasArts did somebody stop and say, what if we were, like, nice to the gamers?
What if we make a game they'd like to play?
So
I have this random idea. What if we start this game out with the premise that our goal is not to make the gamer shrivel up and die?
Well, how about all these kids really want a Ghostbusters video game? So let's give them a management game instead and call it Ghostbusters.
Awesome.
Oh.
Dun, 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 kill me!
Okay, on the show notes we have Doctor Who. I don't know anything about Doctor Who. Somebody wanted to talk.
I thought we were going to do that tonight.
And I think Ender or JD said that he had nothing to talk about if we didn't mention Doctor Who.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. Well just I mean, because we're talking about Doctor Who because we're not going to get to it for months because there's not going to be any new shows. We rotated doctors a few weeks ago, yes. Which yeah. I think is a big deal.
Yeah.
In terms of Doctor Who.
What is this? Is this the 11th?
Yeah, it's
the 11th.
Okay. Though technically, in some ways, it's the 12th because the 10th managed to regenerate in the middle of his run.
Oh, yeah. Himself.
So this is kind of interesting in that it's the 12th because back in the day, they used to say that the 12th regeneration was the last.
Whoa. Time. Which? What? No.
Okay. In the second to last episode of season 4... The Doctor was shot by a Dalek and did regenerate.
He regenerated.
He says he regenerated. So we are technically on the 12th Doctor.
Okay, this is a geek debate that's going to be too long for this show.
I'm going to call shenanigans and then just not argue the point.
Okay.
Why don't we just end it kind of early and say what we think? Do we think the new Doctor will be any good or not?
We haven't seen any of them. There's no point in talking about that. That's not where we are.
It's hard to say just based off of the
preview. And so calling him there doesn't help. But
I think he's going to like saying Geronimo.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, he's going to like saying Geronimo, apparently.
So do you guys get excited for a new Doctor Who or are you lax at this point? Like, oh, okay, whatever.
I really think the old one.
Well, I think new Doctors, though, I mean, it changes the series. It revitalizes the series. I think it always brings something new and different. And it's one of the things that is true of this series that isn't true of any other, where you have a continuous storyline going all the way back to the first Doctor and forward. It's the same universe. It's the same Doctor. I mean, as far as the base character, but every time you bring a new actor in, it's new quirks, new writing, new stuff. And it's unlike any other show in its ability to reinvent itself.
Sounds like a soap opera. I mean,
it is very much like that. No other show besides a soap opera has the dynamic where what they came up with was something where you can rotate your supporting cast at will and rotate your star when the time comes.
You know, the look of the old episodes makes me think of a soap opera, actually.
Well, you can pick elements out of the first few episodes that are still present.
Looks like Dark Shadows to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, Dark Shadows was halfway a soap opera, wasn't it?
Dark Shadows is totally a soap opera. It just happened to have vampires in it. No, that is very true. I think the issue right now with Doctor Who is that I think only at one other time in its history has it needed the revamp of character so little. David Tennant's Doctor, I think, is probably easily the best of almost the entire run of the show, with possibly one exception. So it's a little hard to lose that Doctor. I am much less excited about the new Doctor as I am about the new producer. Besides rotating its star, the show is also rotating its producer and head writer. The new one is Stephen Moffat, who has written a great deal of good shows, including some of the better Doctor Who's over the last few years. Blink, Empty Child, Silence in the Library, and we're going to see some more of the character from that River Song in this series they've revealed. She's in at least for, I think, two more episodes. And he also wrote, if I'm not mistaken, I could be, he wrote a comedy episode of Doctor Who that took place while Doctor Who was off the air for the long period it was, for Comic Relief, which is a charity comedy show. It starred Rowan Atkinson. It was called The Curse of Fatal Death and was hysterical. Absolutely hysterical. I am much more excited about the new writer and producer than I am about the actor. The actor, I hope, carries what the new writer and producer is doing well enough to make the show continue to be great. But I will say, of Doctor Who in the past, we have learned that a bad producer, Jonathan Nathan Turner, can run the show into the ground, and that a good script editor, Douglas Hitchhikers to the Guide to the Galaxy Adams, can make the show phenomenal. So I think, you know, those writing staff changes are big deals.
I would make it, I would ask if any chance if Douglas Adams would return, but that would be in very poor taste. So
yeah,
I apologize.
That would,
he's quite dead.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I also think he may be the Messiah, but that's just me.
Oh.
So I have no idea what you guys were talking about.
You need to watch it, Brian.
I've been ignoring it too.
I watched it when I was 7 on PBS, and
you need to try it again. It's a
but
different.
See, this is a, and this is what's
it was
great
like
about
Tom Baker too, and I just
Tom well, Baker was written very in large part by Douglas Adams. If you listen to it, you'll hear that.
And this is perfect. You have a new doctor, a new producer. If you've not watched the series, this is a great time to start. I mean,
jumping
start
on
with a new doctor.
Well, yeah, I started back with
David Tennant is easily the best doctor since Tom Baker.
You know, when the Chris Eccleston doctor started on Sci-Fi, I started watching then because it was a fresh point to jump in on. And I still haven't watched anything older than that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, you don't necessarily have to. Like, it adds to it, but, you know, you don't have to have watched all of the previous to be able to watch it. You can start at that point.
Yeah.
And catch up. So
I'll say, honestly, you can jump into Doctor Who at any point and expand outward therefrom, and there's quality there.
Yeah.
Especially of writing. If you can move beyond special effects, both in old and new shows, the writing is what's key. And it's the best show in terms of science fiction writing, period. Include your Battlestar Galactica and your Star Trek and whatnot.
Well, Douglas Adams wrote for it. I mean, yeah.
Well, Ender, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I agree with that statement.
Yep. I know
my Doctor Who, and that's all I have to say about that.
So,
well, on that note, we're probably done.
Yes, I would say so.
As someone who's never even cared to watch Doctor Who, I'm gonna ask, listening to you guys is describing about it. Is it safe to say every year I could just watch another show and say I'm watching Doctor Who and I wouldn't be too far off?
Yeah, it's timeless in both a figurative and literal way.
Okay. Fair enough.
Doctor Who proves something I've always said about if you're a properly dressed male, you can step out of a time machine 100 years in the past and 100 years in the future, and no one will bat an eye.
Unless you're Marty McFly.
Exactly.
Okay. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Point taken.
Good, that's a good way to end it.
Might I add, the future of Back to Future 2 happens in 5 years.
Yes.
Or Sue and Nike.
That's true. Okay, guys, let's we'll come back next week and we'll talk about something. I don't know. But it'll be topical and it'll be timely, and you may
just be ports on fear.
And actually, I won't be suffering from a sinus infection, so I'll actually be involved.
Get you some Theraflu, buddy.
We're coming to get you.
I'm on good meds.
Goodness. Oh, you got the awesome meds, huh? I know what you're talking about. I'm from Clayton County. What's the...
Yeah, I'll hook it up. Okay, guys, I'll talk to you next week.
take a look to the sky, just be-